But first, Australia's drug regulator, the Therapeutic Goods Administration, will soon announce if two illegal psychedelic drugs should be removed from the prohibited drugs list. If they do, psilocybin and MDMA, better known as magic mushrooms and ecstasy, could be used to treat a range of mental illnesses. A recent trial in the UK found that psilocybin is effective as a standard antidepressant. David Nutt is Professor of Neuropsychopharmacology at the Imperial College in London, and it's our pleasure to welcome you to RN Breakfast, David.
Thank you very much.
You led this trial. It was a small trial of volunteer patients. Tell me a little bit about the approach you took to this trial.
Well, we wanted to find out how psilocybin, which we had previously shown in an earlier trial, was that a single dose was effective in people with treatment-resistant depression. We wanted to see how it compared against what you might call the gold standard conventional antidepressant, and we used one called escitalopram. And it was a rather clever design because both groups got psilocybin, but the escitalopram group just got a very low dose, which didn't give them a trip, whereas the psilocybin group got a higher 25 milligram dose. They did give them a trip. But everyone had the same degree of psychotherapy before, during, and after the exposure to the psilocybin. So we could essentially eliminate the psychological aspects of the treatment and just focus on the pharmacological ones. And we had two measures of outcome. One was brain imaging and the other was clinical outcome. And the clinical outcome data showed that psilocybin did somewhat better than escitalopram. It was faster acting and it tended to improve more of the different symptoms of depression and maintain a wellness that was considerably better than that of the standard treatment, the escitalopram.
And when you say maintain a wellness, what do you mean by that?
Well, we measured wellness as well as depression because they're slightly separate measures. So we used a standardized scale of how well people felt. It's called the Warwick Edinburgh Wellbeing Scale. And people on after psilocybin generally felt had more well-being as well as less depression, because you can lift depression, and this is one of the problems with current medication like escitalopram, you can lift depression without necessarily improving well-being, because although these drugs blunt depression, they can also blunt the experience of positive mood. Some people complain they get a bit of sort of emotional numbing.
Yeah.
So we wanted to look at ability to have positive as well as less negative mood.
And did you see changes in the brain?
We did. We're in the process of writing that up now. And we've essentially, I think, proved our hypothesis. We believe that these drugs work in different parts of the brain. We believe that escitalopram works deep in the brain, in the stress centers, to dampen down the brain's response to stress. And by protecting you from stress, they allow the brain to heal. And that's why they take 6 to 8 weeks to work, because it takes that long for the brain to recover from chronic stress. Whereas psilocybin, we believe, works in the cortex, the much higher, more recently evolved part of the brain, and it disrupts depressive thinking. And it does that immediately. And that's why people can come out of their depression the very next day after their treatment.
And how long lasting is it, though?
Well, in our original study, we've had some people who've been well for 8 years. The majority find the effect lasts for 2, 3, 4 months, but the depression does creep back. That's why this time we gave two doses, one at the outset and one after 3 weeks. And we're in the process of collecting the 6-month data now to see if there's been a more enduring benefit from that second dose.
So this study was filmed as part of a BBC program called A Cure for Depression. Just how powerful do you believe these drugs are? Are they a magic bullet?
Well, for some people, they offer hope where everything else has failed. In our very first trial, we had some people who'd failed on 10 different antidepressants. They'd all failed on CBT. So, as I said, most of them got better to some extent and some stayed well. So they do offer an alternative strategy. And that's why they're interesting, because they are targeting a different part of the brain. They're targeting a different aspect of depression. And so they give people a second chance in a way. The analogy is a bit like with cancer therapy. You know, we now know that to deal with cancer, we often need to use 3 or 4 or 5 different anti-cancer treatments to hit the cancer in different phases. And for the first time, we now have opportunities to target different aspects, different elements of depression.
I covered this issue earlier in the year because obviously Australia is still looking at whether to allow it to be used in certain circumstances. At the moment, it is a prohibited drug. But there are certainly Australians right now who are self-treating with some of these drugs. Do they need to come with a suite of treatments, though? I mean, what's the danger here?
Yeah, well, I mean, self-medication is obviously all one can do at present, but we don't believe that's ideal. We think that there is definitely added benefit to having medical supervision, to have the drug administered in the right dose, the standardized dose, in a safe environment, a hospital, with therapists who are there in case things go wrong. But more importantly, the therapists are there to help you or help the patient work through the experience and get the maximum benefit from the experience. And I think that combination of medical care and psychotherapy is going to give the optimal outcomes.
So based on that, then, obviously you're going to need health professionals who are trained to work with these kinds of drugs, but also to deliver the kind of additional support that's required in conjunction with these drugs.
Yes. The good thing is, of course, you know, there are tens of thousands of trained psychologists who understand psychotherapy. And I think it would be quite straightforward for them to learn the other aspects of psychedelic psychotherapy they need to acquire. And I have to say, one of the things I've been doing a lot in the last year is been teaching on the Mind Medicine Australia training course, which I think is the best course in the world for educating people about how to use psychedelics and how to develop. I think through that, you will in Australia, you probably already have several hundred people who've got, I think, the competencies and the knowledge to potentially be therapists for this kind of treatment.
So, as I mentioned, Australia's drug regulator is due to announce any day now its decision about whether these drugs should be downscheduled from prohibited to control. It means, of course, then that trials similar to yours can go ahead here. How many other countries allow the use of psychedelics at this stage?
So the situation varies across the world. In most of Latin America countries, Mexico South, allow ayahuasca. And also in Mexico, they also allow magic mushrooms because the Mexicans say that if it grows, you can use it. In North America, the whole state of Oregon has now made magic mushrooms legal, and many individual towns, Denver, Oakland, Vancouver now, I believe, has also made magic mushrooms legal. So it's beginning to become more open there. The mushrooms have always been legal in the Netherlands, and a lot of training courses and retreats take place there. So we're seeing probably about 10 countries in the world now have legal access to psychedelics.
And how are they classified in the UK where you are?
No, and we have the same issue as you have in Australia. They're still wrongly classified as being Schedule 1. In your case, they're called Schedule 9, but the most dangerous drugs. Magic mushrooms are put alongside crack cocaine and crystal meth, which is completely absurd, really. And the reasons for that are historic and political. When you do proper harm assessments of these drugs, which I recently did in Australia 2 years ago with the Australian experts, we published a paper showing that these are some of the least harmful drugs that we know of, way less harmful than some of the legal drugs like tobacco and alcohol. So the restrictions on them are really serve no purpose. They don't deter use, but they just impede and actually stop medical research and treatment.
Well, we'll find out soon enough here whether we can follow your footsteps and conduct some of these trials. Certainly a lot of people are holding out hope that that is the case. Thank you so much for sharing the results of your trial with us this morning.
Thank you very much.
Great to talk to you.
Good luck.
That's Professor David Nutt. He's a professor of neuropsychopharmacology at Imperial College in London. And that BBC doco that I mentioned is called Psychedelic Drug Trial, A Cure for Depression. It's going to be airing on BBC Earth this Thursday, the 9th of December.